You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
I am Maya Korbik, and you're listening to the Earn and Invest podcast.
I didn't grow up knowing much about the stock market. Sure, I knew my parents were investors. I would watch them scour the newspaper for stock quotes, but they never really taught me any more than the basics. Fast forward to college, and my grandmother died and left a small stock portfolio for me as an inheritance. My mother quickly had the money transferred to an advisor who handled everything for me. In fact, over 5 years, I don't think I even talked to her once. My professional career was no different. Now making the big money, I relied heavily on an advisor to make every decision. My knowledge was no better than a child's. I, in a sense, had been shielded my whole life from dealing with the details of investing, first by my parents and then by my advisors. Finally, in my 40s, I decided to take the reins and finally learn for myself. By that time, I had millions of dollars in the bank and was financially independent. Instead of being behind my peers, I was actually ahead. My parents didn't teach me about the market, but did model great financial behavior. Because of saving, earning, and frugality, I accumulated more than I ever will need. Which leaves me with a big question. Should childhood be a carefree time when we are protected and shielded from grown-up realities such as the stock market? Or, like money that has been wisely invested, does knowledge compound over time? Is it best to start early? Maya Korbik is a mother and a seasoned CPA with a background as a CFO, tax accountant, and auditor. Over the past 11 years, she has helped thousands of parents raise financially smart kids with her Instagram platform at teach.kids.money. In an effort to empower young minds with financial wisdom and excitement for investing, she authored a children's book, From Piggy Banks to Stocks, The Ultimate Guide for a Young Investor, which is available November 1st. Maya Korbik, welcome to Earn and Invest. I want to start with a difficult question, and it really comes from my introduction as well as my own experience. Isn't it a parent's job to worry about money and a kid's job to kind of go about and enjoy their life?
Yeah, you know, that's a great, by the way, actually, thank you for having me on this podcast. I'm really grateful to be here and to talk about this. I actually get that question a lot. Should kids just be carefree, not worry about money? But I find that over the last 11 years that I have been doing this, many parents who have children of their own now, of course, they did not grow up in a household like yours, where the parents modeled very good financial behavior, and you sort of learn by observing all that. And you mimic that behavior because you thought this was normal behavior. Many parents that I encounter in my workshops tell me that they grew up in households where debt, consumer debt, was a normal part of everyday living. You know, making ends meet was just perfectly normal part of the existence, even though like some of them come from homes where parents made six-figure incomes. You know, with that being said, I think it's really important to teach our children, for parents actually to learn themselves first and then to teach the children. And I think in your case in particular, there's actually like two parts to your, when I look at your case of when you were growing up. So, you know, your parents were very responsible and then you ended up being very responsible. Sometimes you can have parents that are very responsible and they are modeling good financial behavior. They're investing on their own for their, for themselves as well as for their children. But then you have children who grow up entitled and spoiled because parents never talk to them about money. They don't know how to manage money. They're not aware that this is something they have to do. They just think it happens. And then these are the people that usually end up, you know, getting themselves in trouble. And I've talked to countless parents like that who, you know, I remember there's this one mom, she grew up in a childhood like that. Childhood home like that, where her parents were making actually really, really good money, but they did not exhibit very good behavior. And then she just copied that behavior in her 20s. And then in her 20s, she realized like she couldn't make ends meet. And she, you know, ended up taking some financial literacy courses. And then she realized she was living way above her means. That's kind of like that. That's the reason why I think we need to be teaching kids about money.
I want to ask in a moment about your financial upbringing, but before we get there, it wasn't lost on me while reading From Piggy Banks to Stocks, The Ultimate Guide for a Young Investor, that this book was probably just as important to the parents as it was to the kids. Like I was reading this saying, wow, this is great for kids. And I'm like, this is probably also great for the parents who are reading it with the kids.
Yes, actually. So, the way the book came about was I actually had some families who were testing this book. There were about 10 different families and, you know, I would ask for their feedback. And majority of the parents actually wrote feedback to me saying that they learned things that they never knew. And finally, the stock market started to make sense because it was explained in these, in age appropriate, like childlike manner that anybody can understand. And they were actually really glad that they learned it because, you know, they could actually now like, of course, you know, their children learned it as well, but they could actually have these meaningful conversations. And one mom said to me, she's like, now I can finally watch the news and I understand what they're talking about.
So let's talk about your financial upbringing. In my introduction, I talked about mine. And in a sense, I grew up in a middle upper class family with almost idyllic financial teaching. It wasn't the same for you, was it?
No, it wasn't. To really rewind to my early childhood, I grew up in Bosnia and we were middle class. So upper middle class. So, you know, we were okay. My parents made decent money, but they didn't really talk to us about money. My mom was one of those parents that said money was the root of all evil and you shouldn't give it to your kids.
Yeah, money avoidant, huh?
Right. Money avoidance, complete money avoidance. And then the war happened and we lost everything in the war. So when I was almost 15, we immigrated with two suitcases and $50. So we had nothing. As a teenager, I lived in government shelters. I lived in government housing. I had two part-time jobs when I was, you know, I was putting myself through school, same with university. And during that time, I mean, I learned by absorbing as well, like just watching what my parents were doing, kind of like what you did. Like my parents didn't really sit us down. They didn't really talk to us. And so my mom was very, even to this day, she's very frugal. She's very money conscious. Like she watches every dollar that she spends. So I learned how to stretch a dollar from her. But there were things that I did not learn from my parents simply because I grew up in a communist society in a socialist country that did not have a stock market. So my parents were not investors. They did not know anything about investing. Their extent of investing was putting the money in a savings account or maybe a GIC. That's about it. My parents also never had credit cards. My mom actually got her first credit card, I would say maybe 5 years ago, and she's 72 now, 70, 71, I think. Up until that time, it was like she paid for everything in cash, or it's just a different mentality. One thing a lot of people don't realize, there are a lot of immigrants, right? And they come from different countries, you know, and the economic situation there is very different. So again, like some of them never participated in the stock market. Some of them never had credit cards. Some of them never borrowed money. So, you know, when it comes to these people, or these parents, all of a sudden now they have to teach their children about this. And there's this disconnect, right? Like as soon as their child is 18, the child can get a credit card and they can get themselves in serious problems if they don't know how to manage that credit card, if nobody ever taught them. I really think that, you know, parents who do come here, and I know they have so much, especially as immigrants, because they're learning the new language, they're trying to find jobs, this and that, but they really should be taking the time to teach their children how the economic system works here and prepare them for what is coming so that they don't end up, you know, with like a bad credit score or, you know, crazy amounts of debt on their credit card and so on.
When I listen to your story, I think about this idea of money scripts, right? These preconditioned ideas about money that we often get from the generations before us, whether that be our parents' parents, or even living in a communist country. Your money scripts were money avoidance, right? From your mom, mm-hmm. and probably quite a bit about scarcity from living in a communist country, et cetera. How did you turn that around? I mean, you eventually became a CPA, a CFO. At some point, it must have clicked in you. And this is one of the things we see as adult money coaches and financial advisors. A lot of people come to us with these scarcity mindsets that they grew up with. How did you flip that switch yourself?
You know what? It was very hard and it's still hard. I'm still not 100% there. I find it very hard to enjoy money. There's this guilty feeling every time I'm spending money. You know, when you grow up and, you know, as a teenager, like literally I had to buy everything from my own shampoo. Thankfully, I had roof over my head and I had food. But even with the food, sometimes I would contribute. You know, and my husband and I, we make great money now. Like I'm financially free, like we're fine. But so many times, like I tell my husband, and you know, we really need to be so grateful for what we have, because I constantly remember what it was like not to have anything. And I don't think that's really a good thing. There's part of me that never wants to forget because I always want to be internally grateful for what I have. But there is part of me that's telling me it's enough. Like you have to stop. You need to leave that alone and you need to move on. Like you shouldn't feel guilty going on vacation. You shouldn't feel guilty buying a more expensive pair of shoes. You know, it's things like that. And so I'm also trying to be very careful with my own kids because I noticed that there was a point in time when I was constantly harping on them and telling them, you guys need to be grateful. You guys are not grateful enough. You know, look at, especially if we traveled and we traveled to like third world country, I shouldn't say third world countries, developing countries like Egypt or Peru. And, you know, we're driving through the suburbs and I'm like, look at how these people live. Look at where you guys live. Look what you have. And we're really lucky because all of our friends are doing well. You know, the circle, our immediate circle, the family and friends and my parents, like we've all come really far. So I'm constantly telling the kids, I'm like, you know, you guys have so much, like, please be grateful. Let's give back to less fortunate. But I also realized that, and this is what my daughter said to me. She's like, Mom, you're making us feel so guilty. Like I guess I was putting this blame on them and it's not like they were just born into this family. So it's kind of I'm still working on it, trying to find that balance between being grateful and realizing what we have accomplished versus, you know, just like really enjoying our life, because this is what it is. Life is short. We should be enjoying it, right? As long as we enjoy it responsibly.
I think that's what I really like about your book, From Piggy Banks to Stocks. I think we, as past generations who have gone through trauma, feel like we grew and we learned from that trauma and maybe mistakenly try to bring that to our children and say, look, this could be a lot worse. I lived through a lot worse. You should be thankful. But what your book does is exactly the opposite. Instead of focusing on past traumas, in fact, it starts talking about, well, what can you learn today? What are some of the positive things that you can do to take control as opposed to going through more traumas to understand how to manage your money? It does raise an important question, though. You know, your book has moments of sophistication, right? There are moments where there's some calculations there that you have to be a certain age to understand, et cetera. So first and foremost, what is kind of like the right age to start teaching your children about money?
So I started teaching my kids when they were 4 years old, but I even tell parents of toddlers that they are teaching certain skills that can eventually translate into teaching the kids about money. So it could be things like, let's say, you know, with toddlers, you are building a castle out of blocks. You have a limited amount of blocks. So you have to utilize them in the best way possible to make the nicest, beautiful castle that you can. It works the same with money. We only have a certain amount of money. So how are you going to utilize this money to make the most beautiful life for yourself and your family that you can, right? It would be things like, you know, teaching our kids to share when they're younger. That translates into giving, you know, into being generous. And so with toddlers, we're not really talking about money, but there are skills that certainly translate into money. And then when kids are 4 and 5, like I actually, prior to COVID, I used to go to schools a lot and I used to teach a lot of workshops. You know, kindergartens, they can understand some basics of financial or personal finance. So things like the difference between needs and wants. You know, as long as you don't get into the complexities, like, you know, for example, you know, is the piece of clothing, is it a need or want? Well, sure, it's a need, but what if it's a designer clothing? Well, then it could be, you know, it could be a want. So as long as you don't get into that, but you just really strictly talk about this is a need, this is a want, kids in kindergarten, they can actually understand that. And I like to give them like a little exercise, especially at the end of my workshop, because I always tell them, you know, when you go with your parents into a store, it's not that your parents don't want to buy you things. You know, they don't want to buy you that candy bar or whatever. It's more that your parents have to spend money on needs first. And if there's any money left over, then we spend it on wants. So I tell them, you know, next time you go to the store with your parents, you can, you know, go through the store and you can point at things. Is this a need? Is this a want? You know, you look at cookies. Okay, that's a want. You look at, I don't know, maybe bread. That's a need. And so I had parents actually report to me that sometimes when they went shopping and they did that exercise with the kids would point at something that the parent picked up and they'd be like, hey, that's a want. Why are you picking that up?
I think when the kids are young, toddlers, and even as they're getting a little bit older, you know, they're pretty compliant, right? They want to do the things the parents want to do with them. A lot of these messages, as we read your book, start really getting to the teenager especially, right? Someone who can understand some of the mathematical concepts, et cetera. The thing I found with teenagers is they're often much more interested in things like watching the latest YouTube video or going and hanging out with their friends. How do we get these older kids interested? Because I feel like it's fertile ground to really start teaching them. But how do we get them to think, okay, this is something important, that's worth my time?
There are two things that I typically like to do with teenagers. And I mean, really, you know, if parents who are listening to this podcast episode, if they can start teaching their kids early, that's better because we're sowing these seeds. And the idea is that these kids will grow up with these amazing money habits. And then they will, you know, continue implementing these money habits in their life as they become adults. And they say that 95% of what we do on autopilot, we do it out of habit, right? So we want to teach kids when they're younger. But if we can't do that with teenagers, the two things that I like to do is, one of them is I like to tie whatever it is that we're doing with money to their goals that they truly care about. And, you know, like it could be things like, you know, buying their first car, or it could be like buying their first condo or home. Some of them are not really excited when you tell them, oh, we're saving for your university or your college, right? So it has to be something they care about, right? But some kids don't even care about cars. We've had kids that were part of my Wealthy Kids Investment Club, and some parents were telling me they had to tie they had to kind of come up with a goal for their child to save towards or invest towards. So one child in particular was a musician and he had his own band, just really didn't care about money at all. But they were like, okay, let's think about what is going to excite you so that you really get on board and start learning about money. And what happened was he was actually interested in getting an electric guitar. And my understanding is that those are pretty expensive. So it was kind of like, okay, let's start saving some money and maybe like invest that money as well so that we can get you that electric guitar sooner rather than later.
Do kids understand the long term? Because I get it, right? This is something you want. You want that guitar, maybe even as far as you want to go to college, and college is expensive. But we as adults know that you have to save for much longer term. It's retirement. It's for living a safe life in which if you lose your job, you have enough saved up to manage things. Do kids get that kind of long term thinking?
Absolutely not. And that's why I guess there's a benefit of doing this for so many years, because I've kind of come across all these different scenarios. My kids were my own guinea pigs when it came to like experimenting on them and like talking to other parents, talking to other kids. So I actually developed a framework on how to teach kids about money. And I hope that's going to be my next book. But when it comes to teaching kids about these things, I always recommend that parents, that they separate saving into two different categories. So saving for short term and saving for long term. And the reason why is because kids don't care about the long term. You know, retirement is so far away, they don't want to think about it. So if we can get them to save for short term for these items like electric guitar that maybe they can get in the next year, or maybe a toy that they can get in the next few months, they will get that feeling of gratification, and they will feel good by accomplishing that goal. And if they can actually feel good about that, then, you know, we can slowly translate that and talk to them a little bit about these long-term goals. I like to excite them. And by the way, not all kids are excited about it, but I like to tell them that, you know, if they start investing early enough, they can reach financial freedom, which means that they don't have to work if they don't want to work. And there's nothing wrong with working, but they can choose to do whatever they want because their money will be earning them money. They could be sitting on the beach or playing basketball or whatever, but this money is working hard for them. So I try to excite them that way. But really the first step in all this, like I'm going all over the place, is really teaching kids, especially teenagers, if they have a part-time job, like just take a little bit of money aside and pay yourself first. Put that money aside and forget about it. And that money could be separated into those two categories, like short-term savings and long-term savings. Maybe the long-term savings can go directly into an investment account. And short-term savings are, I don't know, maybe something that's going to happen in the next month or so. But that's kind of how I try to excite them, because they really don't care about retirement. It's so far away.
Maya, in your book, From Biggie Banks to Stocks, The Ultimate Guide for a Young Investor, you go into lots of detail about the stock market, the terms involved, the players involved, how it works. We're not going to go into all that here. We just couldn't cover all that in one interview. But I'm interested in this idea that you decided to focus on the stock market in your book. Was there any thought about real estate or entrepreneurship? I know you touch on entrepreneurship in the book. But the stock market is literally one of many different financial options for young people who are thinking about investing. Why stick with the stock market as opposed to maybe some of those other things?
Yeah, so all those other things are absolutely wonderful too. And I think that, you know, they can definitely help people become financially independent and grow their wealth. The reason why I stuck with the stock market is because it intimidates so many people. I think people is more easily comprehend entrepreneurship or how real estate works rather than the stock market. And so many of them tell me, like when I, on my Instagram, sometimes I'll post like, you know, like a little, in my opinion, simple post. And then I will literally have some of my friends who are, by the way, like these people are super smart. Like one of them is an optometrist. Another one is a family doctor, physician. And they're like, they call me and they're like, you make me feel so stupid with your posts. And I'm like, why do you say that? And they're just like, I feel so intimidated by investing, by anything to do with investing. And the point of this book and the reason why it's written in such simple terms and, you know, it has lots of pictures and it's very colorful. You know, somebody told me that looks like a book for kindergarten kids, but it's not. The reason why it's so simple and the reason why it's done that way is because I want to simplify investing for everybody, because investing is not as complicated as it first seems to be. I truly believe that everybody can understand it. And that's kind of what I wanted to do. Just make it easily understandable for everyone. And there are not many books out there that do that. So that's kind of the goal of this book. And it's not just for kids. It's kind of for parents too. It's for everybody who wants to learn about investing. It's like one of those books, you know, how they have those in dummies series. So essentially, this is one of those books, except, you know, it's for investing.
We are talking to Maya Korbic. She is a mother and a seasoned CPA with a background as a CFO, tax accountant, and auditor. Over the past 11 years, she has helped thousands of parents raise financially smart kids with her Instagram platform at teach.kids.money. And we are talking about teaching kids, including teenagers, about the stock market. We're going to take a short break. I'm Doc G, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast. This episode is brought to you by Range Rover Sport. Range Rover Sport leads by example. With a visceral, uncompromising, and dramatic feel, this car helps you rise to the occasion. How does it do that? Range Rover Sport has powerful on-road performance and commanding all-terrain capability by combining assertiveness with signature Range Rover refinement. This is the car that redefines sporting luxury. The new Range Rover Sport features advanced cabin technologies such as active noise cancellation and cabin air purification, purposeful cockpit-like driving position, and award-winning Pivi Pro infotainment is at the heart of the experience and provides intuitive control of the vehicle systems. Design your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. Once again, explore and build your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. That's LandRoverUSA.com. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenues, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/earn. That is linkedin.com/EARN for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/earn and get started. Let me reintroduce you. We are talking to Maya Korbic. In an effort to empower young minds with financial wisdom and excitement for investing, she authored a children's book, From Piggy Banks to Stocks, The Ultimate Guide for a Young Investor. Maya, I was interested in the fact that in this book, because you're talking about the stock market, you really do delve into the different types of investments. You talk about stocks, bonds, you talk about dividend stocks. You even go as far as to mention indexing and ETFs. You know, I've looked at your platform and I get the feeling that you are probably a big fan of broad-based indexing. How did you decide how far to give your opinions here when you were writing this book? Because I noticed that you touched on all these things, but you didn't, for instance, say, and you shouldn't stock pick, you should broad-based index. You didn't specifically say that, but was there an inclination that you actually wanted to start giving more specific advice?
Oh, definitely. I think that's going to be part two, book part two. But you are right. Like I love index funds. I love ETFs. I wish I learned about those when I was younger. I find them very easy to understand, especially for long-term investor. Somebody, which most of us are. Most of us are long-term investors. And you know, I am not a day trader. I'm not interested in, you know, watching the stock market every day and, you know, selling and buying. And I just don't have time for that. I'm a busy mom. I think most parents are. And, you know, I just want something simple. And I find that index funds and ETFs are very simple, that anybody can learn how to invest in those. And so definitely that's going to be my second book, touching on those and teaching people how to do that.
So you have a very large Instagram following, and you also sent this book out to test families. Tell me about your experience with these kids as they hear these messages. What has been the reaction?
I had one mom, she reported to me, because at the beginning of the book, I talk about the importance of investing and why if we only leave money in the savings account, you know, the money may not necessarily work best for us, because oftentimes inflation is higher than the rate of inflation is higher than the interest rate that we get in the savings account, which means that our purchasing power goes down. So when she said that her and her son were going through that part of the book, he was so alarmed because he actually had some savings, and he was like, we need to invest this money as soon as possible. Like, he was very, very, very much on board with investing. So that was really cool to see that, you know, that part of the book had that reaction on him.
What topic do you think the kids struggle most with? Like, what part don't they get?
I would say delayed gratification. It is so hard. I mean, it's so hard for us as adults because we all want things, right? And that's the hardest part, because, you know, we have to explain to them, you know, oh, if you just hold off now and maybe you don't spend that money, but let's say you invest it, it can go so much further and it can benefit you. And that is very hard to teach. And some of us, I mean, I was actually doing some research years ago on this. Some of us are born with this innate sense of delayed gratification, but that's, I think, something like some small percentage. Don't quote me on it, but it was like 10%. Majority of us, we want immediate gratification.
So what happens as kids read this book and realize that what you're suggesting is not what their parents do, or maybe that's not the ethos of their household? How hard is it for kids when they're reading what I think is kind of best evidence you're giving them and realizing that that's not how their family works?
Yeah, so it's funny, actually, because it's not just the book, but also the workshops that I have been teaching, because sometimes, as I said, like, parents would email me or message me and they would be like, oh, you know, my kid said this because of your workshop. And, you know, they were laughing about it. They thought it was funny. But at the end of the day, it's maybe not as funny, because the kids are realizing, hey, maybe. I had one, actually, a friend, she emailed me and she said that her kids think that they live in a too big of a house and that they need to downsize. So, but, you know, it's a really tough spot to be in. And as a parent, you know, maybe it's one of those things where we just need to have a conversation. And, you know, maybe, you know, you as parents, maybe, you know, we're financially fine and we are choosing to live our life and enjoy it. When that happens, I think parents actually need to have a conversation with the kids and maybe ask some questions, like, why are kids saying something? Maybe the child is worried that, you know, the parent is overspending money, that they don't have enough in the investing and savings account. If that's the case, and, you know, if the parents are maybe not investing as much and maybe spending more, and if the parent think this is the right way, you know, how to handle their finances, then maybe they can explain that. Because obviously the child is mature enough that they can have this conversation, and money should not be taboo, in my opinion. But sometimes, you know, it's a tough conversation, because the parent might realize that, hey, you know what, maybe we are spending too much. Maybe we should be investing more. And it's a time to reflect and maybe make some changes.
It's funny because it reminds me of the drive to improve motor vehicle safety as well as fight lung cancer. What we found is that the kids are taught in school about seatbelts and not smoking, and actually bring those messages home to the parents, who then feel pressured to do those things like wear their seatbelts or to stop smoking. And if you think about it, for instance, seatbelts, it wasn't the older generations that took this on. It's really been the younger generations who learned it in school and took that on as their habit, which created the ultimate change. So I wonder, for instance, through books like yours, if we're actually impacting not just these children's futures, but their family structures, where the parents are being pushed to start considering these things and learn on their own.
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible.
So Maya, after talking to you about your past and knowing that you immigrated to Canada at the age of 15, tell me what life would have been like for you if you had a book like this in your hand at that time.
You know, I think I also, when I wrote this book, I think I wrote it for my younger self because I wish I had a book like this, because I think I was interested in creating wealth because we did not have any at the time. And so I just didn't know how to do it. I knew investing was the way to go. And I did read some of the classic books, but you know, none of them really explained how to do it. And you know, back in the day, we didn't have the blogs. There was no internet. I'm kind of dating myself here. Mm-hmm. But you know, I had two part-time jobs, as I said. So yes, I needed all that money to spend on necessities, but I think I could have put away $10, $20 a paycheck and invested it. And you know, when you run the math, especially if you start investing that early, when you're a teenager, that money really compounds over a long period of time, especially because, as I said before, like, most of us are long-term investors. So if I had known back then what I know now, I would have invested in index funds and ETFs, and I would have contributed from every paycheck, whatever I could, 10, 20 bucks, maybe a little bit more when I got a raise. But I didn't know that. So I did try investing a little bit, you know, and then when my husband and I got married, we actually ended up having an investment advisor. And that was a disaster because we actually didn't end up picking somebody who was good. You know, they were charging crazy fees and they were not also making us a lot of money. I think we were getting 3 or 4% interest, average annual interest rate, which is like nothing. We could have probably done better by investing ourselves, but we didn't know how to invest ourselves. We were intimidated by investing. So that's another thing too. A lot of times people tell me, oh, you're a CPA. You understand investing. It's easy for you. My CPA education did not prepare me for investing. Like, I did not learn anything related to investing. So that's what I want people to understand, that I had to start from scratch. And it's not that difficult. You know, even if you don't get my book, there are so many beautiful podcasts and, you know, lots of information online. Although you do have to be careful who you are listening to, but try to find somebody who's reputable and you can learn so much. And it's really easy to understand this. And this may sound crazy to some people, but I really think that if we could get all the teenagers to start investing early, 10, 20 bucks a week, whatever, we could literally have financially independent society in, like, I don't know, 40, 50 years. These people won't have to work anymore. I think it's possible. It's doable. It may sound crazy to some people, but I don't know. What do you think, Jordan?
Well, you know, that actually goes right into my next question, which is, are they fighting more of an uphill battle today than maybe we did? Certainly than I did, right? I grew up in the 70s and 80s. It was never a question, for instance, that I'd have enough money to own a house. Like, that was just a given, and that's a given for everyone, regardless of what you wanted to do for a living. Are things different today? Because I think that then informs how we answer whether something like you're talking about, where everyone could be financially independent. I actually agree with you. I think that if we were much more savvy at an early age, that would be possible. On the other hand, I don't know if that's part of the capacity of 100% of our population. It's just, there are a lot of people who don't care about this stuff until they have to. And so, for instance, I've had a lot of friends who want to educate college kids. And what they find is they set up all these resources and create all these classes and these things that are for free and no one shows up. And so it's really hard to convince, I think, some of these groups that it's important for them to start thinking about it. On the other hand, I know, for instance, Gen Z is really feeling like they've been given a bad hand. Like, the finances are difficult. It's hard to make above minimum wage. The cost of houses and food and all these things that, again, I took for granted being a kid of the 70s and 80s. So, I mean, I hate to put it in these terms, but are the kids today kind of screwed?
It's a good question. But you know, I hear you when you say about free classes, because for the past 11 years, I always think it's important to give back. And so very often I would hold these free workshops. And I'm talking about the same workshops that I would actually charge thousands of dollars for. Like, I would put them on and be free, and I would barely get anybody to register. And I don't know if it's because they're free that people think they have no value, or, you know, and sometimes if I had people register, I would get like maybe out of, I don't know, 20 people that registered, two would show up. So I would literally have this like one-on-one private lesson or one-on-two private lesson. I do agree with you that there are people that just don't care and they will never care. I also know, and I also know that because, as I said, I used to go to schools and I would do these workshops and, again, try to get the kids to sign up or parents to get the kids to sign up. And I have a friend, a really good friend of mine, and she does jewelry workshops. And I have another friend who does crafting workshops. Their workshops would always be full. My workshops, not so much. And I remember, like, there were so many days when I would come home and I'd be crying to my husband. And I'm like, I don't understand, but this is important. You can, you know, do the jewelry and like you can do crafts anytime. You don't really need anybody to teach you this. You know, but just I think I've come to a realization after literally doing this for 11 years. There are people that care and there are people that don't care. We can't make everybody care. My dream is to educate everybody. I literally, as I'm sitting here, I have a vision board in front of me over here, and the vision of my company is to educate, and I'm reading this literally right now, to educate every child to become a financially independent adult. Will I get a chance to do that? Probably not, because many people don't care. But going back to Gen Z, I think you are right. I think they have it a lot harder than we do. In many of these metropolitan areas, the real estate has skyrocketed. I have no idea how these kids are going to afford any kind of housing, whether it's renting or, you know, getting a mortgage. By the same time, the average salaries have not increased by much. I actually did a research and I posted it on my Instagram maybe a few months back. And I don't have the percentages right now, but essentially it just talks about the percentage increase in housing prices, and it compares that to the percentage increase in average median salary. And I mean, it's night and day. And I don't want to quote the percentages here, but for anybody who's interested, you know, you just kind of have to scroll back and see this. So yes, I think that the newer generations have it a lot harder. I know for my own children, because they have been investing for a long time, they do have like a small nest egg. And my goal would be to get them to perhaps purchase a property with some of this money, but also house hack. Meaning, for those of you who are listening and don't know what that means, is if they purchase a property, they rent out, let's say, the basement or a couple of rooms so that this property is being paid off by the renters. So, you know, this way, the money that they have invested, it's not just squandered away. It's actually put to good use and they keep increasing their wealth. But, you know, I do feel sorry for the new generations. And I just, and I've heard from some of them, they've actually emailed me on Insta or messaged me on Instagram. And they said, what is the point of, you know, doing all that you're saying, because we just can't seem to get ahead. So we might as well party all night, or like they party on the weekends or whatever, and they spend all their money and they have like, they don't have anything saved. So they're like, might as well just live it up, because we'll never be able to own a house.
Well, Maya, I wanted to thank you for being on the show today. As I think about our conversation, I look back at my own introduction and realize that while I was not as interested in the stock market as I could have been, my parents were creating a financial base by teaching our kids about money and investing. They may not embrace it immediately, but when they get to that point in life where they're ready for it, they'll already have some of those habits and some of that information ready, and then they'll be able to thrive. I want to end this episode the way I end every episode by asking you what is up next in your life and where we can find you. Your Instagram account is at teachkidsmoney, which is at teach.kids.money. Tell us what's going on with your platform. What's coming next?
Thank you so much, first of all, for having me on this podcast. I really enjoyed speaking with you. So the next thing is really just launching this book. I'm kind of in the middle of it as we're speaking, as we're doing this interview, and people will be able to purchase it. It's actually available for pre-order right now on Amazon. But once this book is done, I think I would like to perhaps next year write another one. I'm not sure if it's going to be the sequel to this book where I will dive more into ETFs and index funds, or if it will be a book for parents on different steps and different techniques that they can do to teach kids about money management from a very young age until, you know, teenage years. So it's going to be one of the two, but I'm really excited to, you know, whatever I decide, I'm really excited about it. And I'm sure it's going to be fun.
The book is From Piggy Banks to Stocks, The Ultimate Guide for the Young Investor, which is available now, but comes out November 1st. Go ahead and check it out on Amazon. And Maya, if people want to interact with you directly, what is the best way for them to do that?
Oh, they could definitely find me on Instagram. So at teach.kids.money, or they can email me at info@dinarii.com. So that's spelled DINARII.com.
Maya Korbic, thank you so much for coming on Earn and Invest today.
Thank you for having me.
That's a wrap.
Earn and Invest is now part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to this show as well as other fine podcasts.
I guess the question is twofold. Is the conversation evolving, and should it? Let me explain. This weekend, I went to the Bogleheads Conference. I have to say, this is one of the best conferences I've been to in a long while. It is put together by the Bogleheads. These are people who are fans of Vanguard and John Bogle, who developed the first index funds. And every year, they get together and celebrate straightforward, simple index investing, as well as the Bogleheads Forum, which if you guys have never found this, you should Google the Bogleheads Forum. It is a place to have your investing questions answered. There are thousands and thousands of people on this forum, and you can ask everything from the most complex questions to the most simple, and there are tons of people there who are happy to help you out and answer your questions. It is a wonderful way to learn. In fact, one of the first things I did when I decided to take over my own finances is I went to the Bogleheads Forum and asked them how to transfer all my assets from my advisor's accounts to my own Vanguard accounts. And they were able to tell me the technical steps, which is something that no one really explains to you, transfers in kind, that kind of stuff. So at the Bogleheads Conference, there was a lot of talk about investing. A lot of the panels and the speakers really got into the detail of how and why and where we should invest. But they had actually asked me to be there. Christine Benz, who was a driving force in getting this conference together this year, asked me to come there to be the last discussion, and it was about my book, Taking Stock and Living a Regret-Free Life. Now, that was a little bit of a departure of the presentations that had been going on up to that point. Not completely. There were some conversations about things like happiness. It wasn't all just hardcore investing. In fact, Jonathan Clemens and Bill Bernstein had a great discussion just earlier that morning about some of the components of happiness and where money plays into them. But my conversation was a little bit of a departure, maybe a little bit of the forest from the trees for this last discussion of Bogleheads. And it makes me think of our community in general and the community out there in the world, maybe people who aren't personal finance buffs. Have we moved past money for the sake of money? And are we talking about what it really means in our lives? So, of course, it's really important to understand how we accrue and invest money. And no one should tell you that there's anything wrong with learning that. But are we evolving? Are we moving past the basics of how do we accrue money, and more specifically, what do we do with that money? Obviously, you guys know that here on Earn and Invest and with my book, Taking Stock, that's a lot of what I want to talk about. What does that money get us? What does it buy us? We all know there are these movements in the financial independence world, things like SlowFi and CoastFi. In a lot of ways, people are really focusing on this idea of lifestyle design as opposed to the grind it out, front load the sacrifice version of financial independence. And I think our conferences and our thought leaders are moving again in that direction also, starting to talk about the softer side of money management, not just keeping our wits about us so that we don't sell in the midst of a recession when we should be a buy and hold investor, but also, how do we feel about that money? There are many of us who started in the financial independence realm who are getting to this point where we're retiring or starting to draw down and realizing that that doesn't feel so good and that maybe emotionally we're not ready for what we've mathematically calculated. In order for us to evolve as people, we have to evolve the way we think about these things. So I'm really excited that we're having some of these deeper conversations, not just about the spreadsheets and about the math, but also about what comes next. And so the question is, are we evolving? The answer is definitely yes. Should we evolve? For sure. Because as I said many times, money is a tool, not a goal. And in order to use that tool, we have to evolve mentally to understand that winning the game is not accruing the most money, but using that money to build a better life. All right, I keep things running just to get a little bit of an after show, just about what we talk about afterwards. First and foremost, is there anything about your book you feel like we didn't bring up or anything important that we didn't talk about?
I don't think so. I think you had some really, really great questions and I really enjoyed speaking with you. I mean, it was very insightful. Like everything that you asked was very, very good. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you. I enjoyed your book quite a bit. And what I always say about books like this too is, and I tell people who are listening, there's tons of detail in that book we didn't talk about, right? There's tons of, you know, information about the stock market, what the stock market is about, how to understand it, what the terms are. And I specifically don't go into all that because I want people to get a flavor for kind of the deeper issues. But I hope people don't forget that it's actually a really great place to find all that stuff. And it's always something I struggle with when I interview authors, because I want to get to the general idea of what they're talking about, but leave the specifics for people to go out and buy the book, etc.
It feels really good to be productive, but a lot of the time it's easier said than done, especially when you need to make time to learn about productivity so you can actually, you know, be productive. But you can start your morning off right and be ready to get stuff done in just a few minutes with the Inc. Productivity Tip of the Day podcast. New episodes drop every weekday, so listen and subscribe to Inc. Productivity Tip of the Day wherever you get your podcasts. That's Inc. Productivity Tip of the Day wherever you get your podcasts.